and no more words passed between them. The snow-crowned mountains of Havnor sank away behind them southward, blurred by the mists of early winter. They rode on past the mouth of the Sea of Ea, where long ago Alfarin was drowned, and past the Enlades. They lay 2 days in port at Barilla, the City of Ivory, white above its bay in the west of myth-haunted Enlad. At all ports they came to, the crewmen were kept aboard the ship and set no foot on land. And then as a red sun rose, they rowed out on the Oskill Sea, into the northeast winds that blow unhindered from the islandless vastness of the North Reach. Through that bitter sea they brought their cargo safe, coming the second day out of Barilla into port at Neshwum, the trade city of eastern Oskill. Ged saw a low coast lashed by rainy wind, a gray town crouching behind the long stone breakwaters that made its harbor, and behind the town, treeless hills under a snow-darkened sky. They had come far from the sunlight of the inmost sea. Longshoremen of the Sea Guild of Neshwum came aboard to unload the cargo. Gold, silver, jewelry, fine silks and southern tapestries, such precious stuff as the lords of Oskill hoard, and the freemen of the crew were dismissed. Ged stopped one of them to ask his way. Up until now, the distrust he felt of all of them had kept him from saying where he was bound, but now, afoot and alone in a strange land, he must ask for guidance. The man went on impatiently, saying he did not know, but Skior, overhearing him, said, "The court of the Terranan, on the Kexemt Moors. I go that road." Skior's was no company Ged would have chosen, but knowing neither the language nor the way, he had small choice. Nor did it much matter, he thought. He had not chosen to come here. He had been driven, and now was driven on. He pulled his hood up over his head, took up his staff and bag, and followed the Oskillian through the streets of the town and upward into the snowy hills. The little Otak would not ride on his shoulder, but hid in the pocket of his sheepskin tunic, under his cloak, as was its wont in cold weather. The hills stretched out into bleak, rolling moorlands, as far as the eye could see, and they walked in silence, and the silence of winter lay on all the land. "How far?" Ged asked after they had gone some miles, seeing no sight of village or farm in any direction, and thinking that they had no food with them. Skior turned his head a moment, pulling up his own hood, and said, "Not far." It was an ugly face, pale, coarse, and cruel. But Ged feared no man, though he might fear where such a man would guide him. He nodded, and they went on. Their road was only a scar through the waste of thin snow and leafless bushes. From time to time other tracks crossed it or branched from it. Now that the chimney smoke of Neshwum was hidden behind the hills in the darkening afternoon, there was no sign at all of what way they should go or had gone. Only the wind blew always from the east, and when they had walked for several hours, Ged thought he saw, away off on the hills in the northwest where their way tended, a tiny scratch against the sky, like a tooth, white. But the light of the short day was fading, and on the next rise of the road he could make out the thing, tower or tree or whatever, no more clearly than before. "Do we go there?" he asked, pointing. Skior made no answer but plodded on, muffled in his coarse cloak with its peaked furred Oskillian hood. Ged strode on beside him. They had come far, and he was drowsy with the steady pace of their walking and with the long weariness of hard days and nights in the ship. And it began to seem to him that he had walked forever and would walk forever beside this silent being through a silent, darkening land. Caution and intention were dulled in him. He walked as in a long, long dream, going no place. The Otak stirred in his pocket, and a little vague fear also woke and stirred in his mind. He forced himself to speak. "Darkness comes and snow. How far, Skior?" After a pause, the other answered without turning, "Not far." But his voice sounded not like a man's voice, but like a beast, hoarse and lipless, that tries to speak. Ged stopped. All around stretched empty hills in the late dusk light. Sparse snow whirled a little, falling. "Skior!" he said, and the other halted and turned. There was no face under the peaked hood. Before Ged could speak spell or summon power, the Gebeth spoke, saying in its hoarse voice, "Ged!" Then the young man could work no transformation, but was locked in his true being and must face the Gebeth thus defenseless. Nor could he summon any help in this alien land where nothing and no one was known to him and would come at his call. He stood alone, with nothing between him and his enemy but the staff of Yewood in his right hand. The thing that had devoured Skir's mind and possessed his flesh made the body take a step towards Ged, and the arms came groping out towards him. A rage of horror filled Ged, and he swung up and brought down his staff, whistling on the hood that hid the shadow face. Hood and cloak collapsed down nearly to the ground under that fierce blow as if there was nothing in them but wind, and then, writhing and flapping, stood up again. The body of a Gebeth has been drained of true substance and is something like a shell or a vapor in the form of a man, an unreal flesh clothing the shadow which is real. So, jerking and billowing as if blown on the wind, the shadow spread its arms and came at Ged, trying to get hold of him as it had held him on Rokhnol, and if it did, it would cast aside the husk of Skior and enter into Ged, devouring him out from within, owning him, which was its whole desire. Ged struck at it again with his heavy smoking staff, beating it off, but it came again, and he struck again, and then dropped the staff that blazed and smoldered, burning his hand. He backed away, and then all at once turned and ran. He ran, and the Gebeth followed a pace behind him, unable to outrun him, yet never dropping behind. Ged never looked back. He ran through that vast dusk land where there was no hiding place. Once the Gebeth in its hoarse whistling voice called him again by name, Ged! But though it had taken his wizard's power thus, it had no power over his body's strength and could not make him stop. He ran. Night thickened about the hunter and the hunted, and snow blew fine across the path that Ged could no longer see. The pulse hammered in his eyes. The breath burned in his throat. He was no longer really running, but stumbling and staggering ahead. And yet, the tireless pursuer seemed unable to catch up, coming always just behind him. It had begun to whisper and mumble at him, calling to him, and he knew that all his life that whispering had been in his ears, just under the threshold of hearing, but now he could hear it, and he must yield, he must give in, he must stop. Yet he labored on, struggling up a long, dim slope. He thought there was a light somewhere before him, and he thought he heard a voice in front of him, above him somewhere, calling, "Come, come!" He tried to answer, but he had no voice. The pale light grew certain, shining through a gateway straight before him. He could not see the walls, but he saw the gate. At the sight of it, he halted, and the Gebeth snatched at his cloak, fumbled at his sides, trying to catch hold of him from behind, and with the last strength in him, Ged plunged through that faint shining door. He tried to turn to shut it behind him against